This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
North Korea hits out of the U.S. President's recent remarks about Pyongyang, warning Washington of a response to its hostile policies. Canadians stage a rally against coronavirus restrictions, while similar protests in Sweden, Belgium, and Finland turn violent. Colombia's president orders deployment of military in several cities amid violent protests against the government tax plans. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News. Here in the Iranian capital, I'm your host, Bahram Sanjafik. Good to have you with us. North Korea has warned the U.S. that it will face a very grave situation for sticking to over half a century of hostile policy toward Pyongyang. North Korean Foreign Ministry said that U.S. President Joe Biden has made a big blunder after he called for diplomacy and stern deterrence against Pyongyang. The ministry called the talk of deterrence a veiled nuclear threat and diplomacy a signboard for hostile action. The ministry said this forces Pyongyang to take corresponding measures. In his Wednesday address to Congress, Biden said North Korea's nukes pose a serious security threat. His press secretary, Jen Psaki, later called for the full denuclearization of North Korea. Pyongyang says that its nuclear program is for self-defense amid the U.S. military's provocations on the Korean Peninsula. Kim Do-shu, a senior fellow at the Pangol Institution, earlier joined us with his take on the latest row between the U.S. and North Korea.
It's really mostly up to the United States, you know, what kind of policy they are going to have toward North Korea. And then we would have the new kind of dynamics between the two countries and in the region. For example, the Trump administration pursued a grand bargain, UGC summit diplomacy between the two sides. A lot of people like that, but unfortunately, because of the hawkish, politicians inside the United States, their strong opposition, their sabotaging activity, so the summit failed. And then before that, you have Trump, you have the Obama. The Obama pursued strategic patience, basically doing very little. And now Biden says, basically, I'm going to pursue a policy in the middle ground between Obama and Trump. So we can see, basically describe that as a normal diplomatic approach to talk to the North Korean side. But it's really about, usually the U.S. would, put forward a lot of requirement, a lot of demands, what the North Koreans should do, and then the U.S. will react to their actions over there.
Tens of thousands of people have rallied in the Canadian city of Montreal to protest coronavirus restrictions imposed by the provincial government to curb the third wave of the pandemic. Protesters held signs and chanted slogans expressing opposition to masks, curfews, and health protocols. They argued that restrictions imposed by the Quebec government are unjustified. Police made some arrests. The government had initially imposed curfews across Montreal, but said the restrictions would be eased as of Monday due to the slowing rates of infection. Canada has recorded more than 1.2 million cases of coronavirus and 24,000 deaths, more than half of them in Quebec and Ontario. Now turning to Europe, in Sweden, anti-lockdown protesters have been taken to the streets of the capital of Stockholm, demanding the lifting of the country's COVID-19 restrictions. Police arrested several protesters after they refused to disperse. Also in the Belgian capital, police used water cannon and tear gas to disperse ralliers to defy social distancing. Hundreds of people marched in central Brussels and through the eastern city of Liège, demanding relaxation of coronavirus lockdown measures. In Finland, police arrested some 50 lockdown ralliers in the city of Helsinki. Most European countries are facing a third wave of the pandemic, as the EU and individual member states are coming under fire for slow vaccination rollouts. German police have clashed with protesters taking to the streets to mark International Labor Day, also known as May Day, in the capital, Berlin. Protesters set garbage cans on fire and threw rocks and bottles at anti-riot police. Some officers used pepper spray against the crowd. Some others used water cannons to extinguish the fire. Several police officers have been injured. Similar scuffles broke out in other European countries. In Turkey, more than 200 protesters were arrested in Istanbul. Turkish officials had allowed union workers to hold memorials to mark the annual holiday, but they had warned against illegal gatherings in violation of coronavirus restrictions. Thousands of people also joined May Day rallies in Spain, the UK, and France. In Paris, police used tear gas to disperse the ralliers. French demonstrators in the capital and other cities mainly called for better working conditions, social and economic justice, and reforms in unemployment benefits.
Over 300 marches took place and hundreds of thousands demonstrated all over France for May Day to claim more rights for the workers. The COVID crisis is hitting the French economy very hard, but not everybody is equally affected by the crisis. The 40 biggest French companies are doing very well despite the COVID crisis, but they prefer to pay benefits for their shareholders rather than improving working conditions. So the main concern for French trade unions now is to save jobs and to stop companies from firing workers.
The big companies have received a lot of public money without any social ecological conditions to fulfill. Public money cannot be given to companies that fire workers continue to pollute, companies that relocate. So we demand that strict conditions be imposed before giving public aid to companies.
The COVID crisis has highlighted the importance of ordinary workers for the French economy. Garbage collectors, railway workers, supermarket cashiers, mostly women, home care workers, delivery drivers, and, of course, hospital workers. Their work is now widely considered as essential to keep the economy running. French President Macron promised to re-evaluate their jobs.
Macron just promised a bonus that is not even obligatory. He does not want to increase the minimum wage, and that is for us the reference. The government thinks that higher salaries will lead to less jobs, but for us it's the opposite. Higher salaries will boost the economy and create more jobs.
The demonstration in Paris was closely monitored by the police. Clashes broke out when more radical demonstrators threw stones and bottles to the police officers who charged and fired tear gas. There is a lot of frustration among working people. Many blame the French authorities for its disengagement from the public sector, especially the hospital sector, which is crucial to get the coronavirus under control. The anger is still growing among working people. Those at the front line against the coronavirus demand a permanent upgrade of their jobs, salary and working conditions. But the French government, till now, has only paid them bonuses once. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
Protesters have also staged rallies to commemorate International Workers' Day across the U.S. Marchers say that the coronavirus era is sharply increasing inequality, and that poverty gives them even more reasons to demand their rights as workers. Rami Mazahari has the story.
Across the world, and even in the United States, people took to the streets to celebrate International Workers' Day, May 1st. The turbulent 2020 saw America reverse 50 years of political apathy. Marchers say the time for the lower and middle classes to unite is now, because the 1% is already united and profiting from soaring post-lockdown inequalities every day.
I do think that there will be a rise of leftism because, you know, when we're able to win certain gains through struggles like Black Lives Matter has, you know, getting Chauvin convicted, that shows the power of the working class to fight for more. And, this is just the beginning of the mobilizations I think we're going to see.
Given the status of Chicago as the ideological center of neoliberal thought, many may be surprised that the epicenter of the very first May Day ever was Chicago. In 1886, 100,000 Chicagoan leftists peacefully took to the streets to demand an 8-hour working day and were met with deadly police violence. The U.S. government failed to replace May Day with an attempt at Law and Order Day, but by 1890, the first International Workers' Day for Unity and Solidarity was declared. The holiday is celebrated in scores of countries and often called Labor Day, but most English-language countries celebrate their own Labor Day in autumn.
This is a day where we're connecting lots of struggles that are important to the workers' movement, right? Immigrants' rights, the defunding the police, the Black Lives Matter explosion of the last year, right? The uprising has shown that there is really a fighting mood within the U.S., the workers' movement in general.
Many 19th-century struggles are still being fought today, such as against the privileges and parasitism created by monarchies. New U.S. President Joe Biden just rejected a $15 per hour minimum wage, even though wages haven't been hiked since 2009 and non-governmental estimates of inflation are 10% annually. Businesses like Amazon are dubbed innovation heroes in the mainstream media, yet are notorious for grueling working conditions. Many marching on May Day also oppose Western liberal democracy, which is often accused of creating and protecting a new aristocracy on the backs of the average worker. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
The fourth day of anti-tax reform strike in Colombia ended in violent clashes in the capital city. President Iván Duque has ordered military deployment in Bogotá and other cities affected by the protests. The rallies went ahead on Saturday despite a court order to postpone them due to the COVID pandemic. Masses filled the streets in Colombia's major cities to urge the government to withdraw the proposed reforms that would increase taxes and eliminate many exemptions. Six people have died in the rallies. Earlier this week, the Colombian president announced that the reforms would be revised. However, the government insists the reforms are vital to stabilize the country's economy. Colombia experienced its deepest GDP crash in 50 years last year, and the COVID pandemic has increased its unemployment rates. Iran's chief nuclear negotiator Abbas Araghchi says an agreement has been reached to remove most individuals and entities from the U.S. sanctions list, but major differences still remain, and progress is slow. From Vienna, where negotiations to save the Iran nuclear deal continue, Omar Lesky reports.
Another joint commission meeting among the remaining signatories of the Iran nuclear deal, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, comes to an end in Vienna. Iranian lead delegate Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi says an agreement has been reached to remove the majority of individuals and entities on the U.S. sanctions list and that negotiations are continuing on the rest of the names on the list. Araghchi had mentioned earlier that the U.S. has also agreed to lift sanctions on Iran's energy, finance, insurance, automotive and shipping sectors. But Iran is demanding the removal of all U.S. sanctions imposed after the U.S. withdrawal from the deal in 2018, including those imposed under other labels by the Trump administration.
It's a very complicated issue, and as you know, sanctions have different categories, and we have to deal with all of them. Of course, what is our guiding principle is the firm positions taken by the Islamic Republic of Iran and has been emphasized by the Supreme Leader.
Iran has also steadfastly opposed a step-by-step process, saying it would only go back to full compliance after all U.S. sanctions are lifted and the Islamic Republic verifies their effective removal. Araghchi said delegates are now involved in the time-consuming process of drafting an agreement.
Now we have some texts available to us based on the negotiations we have already made. And now we are working on the words and phrases and sentences and paragraphs.
EU coordinator Enrique Mora said there were moderate advances, adding that with more detail comes more complexity. While the U.S. delegation led by Robert Malley has been engaged in negotiations in Vienna, there's been no direct talks between Iran and the U.S. Delegates have decided to have further consultations in their respective capitals before returning for another joint commission session here at the end of next week. Homa Lezgi, Vienna.
Now moving on, an opinion poll shows Britain's ruling Conservative Party is losing its popularity amid allegations surrounding Prime Minister Boris Johnson. According to a survey for the Observer newspaper, Johnson's party has fallen from 11 points to 5 points in lead. And that's amid allegations about illegal renovation funding for the Premier's Downing Street apartment. He's also facing criticism for reportedly saying that he would rather see more people die than order another COVID-19 lockdown. Now, the survey comes just days before Britons would go to polls in key elections nationwide. The vote is the first since the pandemic began and considered to be a litmus test for Keir Starmer since he became the leader of opposition Labour Party. His promise to rebuild the party after its disastrous 2019 general election loss. The coronavirus pandemic continues to wreak havoc across Europe, which accounts for roughly one-third of all COVID cases and deaths worldwide. France has reported 195 new deaths in hospitals and over 25,000 new infections. That raises the total cases there to 5.6 million. The tally is the fourth largest in the world and Europe's largest caseload. Elsewhere on the continent, Italy reported another 226 deaths and some 13,000 new infections. The country has 121,000 COVID fatalities, the second highest death toll in Europe after the UK. In Germany, officials logged nearly 19,000 more cases. Fatalities also rose by 232. Both figures were down from a day earlier. In Russia, authorities registered 9,200 new infections, bringing the total cases there to more than 4.8 million. In Brazil, officials have registered some 67,000 new confirmed COVID cases, raising their total there to more than 14.7 million. Health authorities also registered 2,600 new fatalities, pushing the toll to 406,000. Brazil remains the world's second worst hit by the pandemic in terms of fatalities. Meantime, supporters and opponents of President Jair Bolsonaro demonstrated in Sao Paulo amid the surging pandemic. Bolsonaro has been criticized for undermining the dangers of the virus, avoiding masks, and pushing unproven remedies. Elsewhere in Latin America, Mexico reported 3,000 new coronavirus cases and hundreds more deaths. The country's total number of cases now exceeding 2.3 million, and the fatalities stand at 217,000. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Listeners special. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this Sunday, May 2nd, 2021. I'm Ota Fairfani hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters. So, dear listeners, please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Or if you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Remember, dear listeners, Listeners Special, the Sunday program, is your own program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Dear friends, today, as I said, is May 2nd, corresponding with the 19th of the blessed month of Ramadan. Dear friends, the 19th of the blessed month of Ramadan in 40 AH was when the renegade Abdurrahman ibn Muljam struck Imam Ali, peace upon him, with a poisonous sword while the Imam was in Mihrab or niche of the Mosque of Kufa. Condolences to you on this tragic day. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. As you may know, these reception reports are very useful and important to us in IRIB English Radio, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to our dear listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving a QSL card from us. And here I truly appreciate those of our dear listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Konstantin Laskin from Russia, Dan Olsen from Sweden, and Hector Fria Hofer from Chile. Well, Konstantin, Dan, and Hector, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And also a million thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us letters and emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read their emails and letters. Here we have an email from Andy Martiniuk from Russia. Andy is one of our regular listeners. Also, we have an email from Vikram Keshwala from the UK, also one of our regular listeners. Mataram Kaga from India has sent us an email. Also, we have an email from Ratan Kumar Pal from India. That's great. And the last but not the least is an email from Mumi Sultana from Bangladesh. Dear friends, after a short break, I will be back with all these kind emails and letters from around the world just after the break. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special. First of all, we have an email from Andy Martiniuk from Russia. Andy is one of our regular listeners who says, "Dear friends, it is with great pleasure that I report the reception of IRIB English Radio. The overall reception quality of your broadcast was promising. If the information in this report matches your station log, I would greatly appreciate receiving a QSL or verification card from you, as well as some material about your station and your country. Thanks so much for your time. I hope your engineers found my reception report useful for the further programming. Good luck, N73. First of all, Salam Andy Martinuk from Russia, and warmest greetings to you. Many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio, and we're so glad that you had no trouble receiving our signals in your region, in your country, Russia. And as you've described it as promising and good, thank God. And regarding your request about sending you QSL card or verification card, my colleagues in IRIB English Radio are actually preparing QSL cards, also promotional items and souvenirs of IRIB English Radio, including the stamps and the postcards about Iran and other things, and the Iranian monuments, to send to our dear listeners around the world. Thank God. And anyway, we're so happy that you've properly received our signal. So, Andy Martinuk from Russia, please, in your upcoming emails to IRIB English Radio, tell us which programs you like the best and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs, because it's your views that are important to us. Many thanks for writing to us. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Andy from Russia. Also from the UK, we have an email from Vikram Keshwala. Vikram says, "Dear staff of IRIB English Radio, I could listen to your radio station today, and I'm writing to send you a reception report. I hope it will be of interest to you. Thank you so much for providing your program to the public, and continue to broadcast on shortwave while other broadcasters are leaving it. If you issue QSL cards, I would very much like to receive one, if at all possible. I look forward to future programs and would gladly send in reception reports from time to time. That is all. Thanks again for your help and kindness, and I look forward to hearing from you soon." And salam and warmest greetings to you, Vikram Keshwala from the UK. Many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio. We also do believe that shortwave radio, traditional radio, is still the most popular and the most favorable way of radio around the world. Which is especially very suitable in the time of the coronavirus pandemic, where it is not possible to travel around the world, so radio and television are the best means to, you know, gain information about the culture of different countries and the politics and the news, everything. It's kind of amusement and kind of getting updated about the world developments, of course. Also regarding your request about sending you QSL cards, as I told other listeners, my colleagues, of course, are preparing the QSL cards and promotional items, including the postcards about the Iranian culture and Iranian monuments for you, dear listeners, after a long pause that was caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Thank God. So, Vikram Keshwala from the UK, please write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs, because it's your views that are important, as I said in the introduction of the program. Many thanks. We are looking forward to hearing from you. Stay safe and healthy. So, dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from our dear listeners around the world. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and here we have an email from a new listener. This new listener is from India. He is Motaram Kaga. He says, I am a new listener of IRIB English Radio. I listen to your programs and visit your website time to time, and I have to say that both of them are quite informative and interesting, but I usually only took at your news at the website. It's for 2 months that I'm listening to your programs. Please send me a QSL card. Thank you. Salam and greetings to you, Motaram Kaga from India, and many thanks for writing to IRIB English Radio. It seems that you've already joined IRIB English Radio. Welcome. It's an honor to have you with us as a new listener. You can also, Motaram Kaga, you can also find the archive of our broadcast in the website. As you know, the address is www.parsodate.com/en, the archive and the online broadcast of the radio is available also in our website. So we are so happy that you enjoy IRIB English radio programs as well as the website. And as for your request about sending you a QSL card, my colleagues, as I said, are preparing those QSL cards and the souvenirs of our radio after long pause because of the coronavirus pandemic. Anyway, many thanks for writing to us. Motaram Kaga from India, write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. We have another email from India. This email is from Ratan Kumar Pal from India. Ratan Kumar Pal from India says, greetings from West Bengal, India. I am a regular listener of your radio. A few days ago, I had a chance to listen to one of your programs that was about Iran's culture and tourist attractions, which I enjoyed it so much. Thanks for this nice and informative program. Please verify my reception with your QSL card and send some postal stamps of Iran and other countries. Stamps collection is my second hobby. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Ratan Kumar Pal from India. And deepest thanks to you for sending us this email. Ratan Kumar Pal, one of our regular listeners. It seems that you've already listened to an IRIB English radio program about Iranian culture and tourist attractions. I suppose it's called Close Up Iran. Broadcast on Mondays. Yes, I think it's Close Up Iran. And this program is available, the archive of the, the recorded program is available in the website with the address www.parsodate.com/en. And we're so happy that you enjoyed this program a lot. And so Ratan Kumar Pal from India, write to us soon. We wish you all the best in your upcoming emails and letters. Please tell us your views about our programs because it's your views that are important. We're looking forward to hearing from you soon. Stay safe and healthy, Ratan Kumar Pal from India. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Welcome back. Here we have an email from Bangladesh. This email is from Mumi Sultana from Bangladesh, who says, dear friends, please accept our warm greetings to all IRIB English radio staff. As a club president, we highly praise your best quality programs. Regularly, we visit your nice webpage. I think it is just like a mirror which shows your country and culture to the world. We pray for all listeners of IRIB English Radio to pass this pandemic safe and sound. We also hope We can get gifts and promotional items from you now or in the future. Our club has 186 members. Every year, we arrange a yearly sports and cultural program such as tree plantation, free sewing training for young female and educational programs based on age, etc. And Mumi Sultana from Bangladesh, salam, and you please accept our warm greetings and appreciation for sending us this email from Bangladesh. We are so happy that the signals of IRIB English Radio are heard in your region, in your country, Bangladesh. Many thanks for reflecting your views about our programs and our broadcast. So you are a club president, and as you said, you praise our programs, and as you have assessed our programs as best quality. Thank God. Thank you for your really inspiring message to IRIB English Radio. And you also said that you visit our webpage. Thank you a lot. It's an honor to have you with us. And as for your request about sending you promotional items, yes, my colleagues are preparing to do so. And they will do it in the near future. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your, you know, sharing your experiences in your club. As you said, you have 186 members. Thank you for sharing your experiences and activities such as plantation, tree plantation, and sewing training. That's great. Thanks for sharing your experiences with us and dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Write to us soon, Mumi Sultana from Bangladesh, and tell us your views about our programs. For the time being, stay safe and healthy. We're looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Well, dear listeners, with the best wishes, especially good health in the time of pandemic, we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pastoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pastodayenglish. Thank you all.
the debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has expressed concern over the violence that Bahraini security forces have inflicted on prisoners at the Job prison in Manama. This after prisoners initiated a peaceful sit-in complaining about their treatment and the neglect of another political prisoner, which led to his death. After more than a decade of protests by the Bahraini people, the regime continues with its brutal attack against the people of this country, both inside of prisons and out.
Protests are growing in Bahrain, inside and outside prison walls, so is the regime crackdown. On Friday, the UN Human Rights Office described as disturbing the Bahraini regime's use of force to break up a peaceful sit-in at the country's main prison mid-April. OICHR slammed as unnecessary and disproportionate the violent repression of the sit-in at Jao prison located south of the capital, Manama. The inmates have been demonstrating against detention conditions, particularly the lack of access to medical treatment. The sit-in started in early April after the death of a political prisoner due to reportedly being denied timely access to essential health care. Outside the prison, Bahrainis have been holding similar protests, calling for the release of political prisoners and better conditions. OICHR says the lack of healthcare in overcrowded Bahraini prisons has been an issue for years, which has turned into a chronic problem due to the coronavirus pandemic. It says Manama's response to protests has been in the form of more detentions. Thousands of opposition politicians, activists, journalists, and human rights defenders have been imprisoned in Western allied Bahrain since an uprising in 2011 and subsequent years of crackdown.
The Bahraini regime has been clamping down very viciously on these political prisoners that have been protesting against appalling conditions in Bahraini prisons. These are, in fact, political prisoners. It's important to emphasize, because these are people that had protested very peacefully back in 2011, demanding political reforms, democratic rights, and human rights, and even citizenship rights. They've been protesting not only against the appalling conditions that exist there, but these conditions have been worsened as a consequence of the pandemic.
Bahrain's most prominent cleric, Ayatollah Sheikh Isa Qassem, says drawing up a new constitution is the only way out of the political crisis. He has urged the regime to pursue an agreement with the opposition instead of increasingly suppressing the dissidents. That advice is likely to fall on deaf ears, given over 10 years of crackdown. However, with every protest chipping away at the legitimacy and authority of the Al Khalifa regime, it is only fast-tracking the inevitable, which cannot be suppressed.
I'd like to welcome my first guest out of Washington, D.C., author and former U.S. diplomat Michael Springman. Michael, great to have you with us. Now, Michael, when we look at the situation in Bahrain, I mean, what is it about the regime? Why is the regime so repressive against the people there? What is it trying to get to?
Well, it's trying desperately to hold on to power, and it's been backed by Saudi Arabia and the United States since the beginning of the protests 10 years ago, with the Saudis invading the country to help crack down on people who wanted a better way of life and a little bit of democracy. And, of course, the United States supports it militarily and financially, using it as the base for the Fifth Fleet that sails the Persian Gulf instead of the American Gulf. And there are some 20,000 soldiers, sailors, and Marines there. And the Americans love this, and it puts money in the coffers. It's propped up the Al-Khalifa dynasty. So if this were taken away, the country would collapse, if you can call it a country. It's basically a city with some dirt around it. And there wouldn't be any more Khalifas. There wouldn't be any more overcrowded prisons. There wouldn't be any more beatings. There wouldn't be any more killings. But unfortunately, nobody will do anything about it. It's like the weather. You always talk about it, but you don't do anything about it.
And let's look at the other side of the coin, Michael, because on the one hand, we have the regime, which is behaving so oppressively. On the other hand, we have, as far as those countries, that they're giving this regime full support, we're talking about, especially these Western countries like the United States or like the UK. What's in it for them? Why are they supporting this repressive regime?
Well, one, of course, it's value for money. They sell weapons and other sorts of arms and ammunition and things to the Khalifas to control their country. And also, it's used as a base against Iran. It's one of the many bases that the Americans have built encircling the country. And they see the Fifth Fleet sailing up and down the Persian Gulf as a way of controlling Iran and keeping Iran from exercising even a modicum amount of control in the region there, in the water. They scream bloody murder every time a couple of motorboats sail within a couple of hundred meters of an American warship. So it's, again, it's money for the merchants of death, and it's control, political control, and economic control aimed at Iran.
Welcome my next guest out of London from Islamic Human Rights Commission, Reza Kazem. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, Reza, why do we not see more forceful language being used by this UN office? Now, it said it is disturbed by what has happened in the prison in Manama, but it doesn't seem to hold it responsible or demand any type of action. Your take on that?
I think one of the things that we need to recognize that the United Nations is going to be is often limited by the powers like Britain, like America, who have particular influences that they bring to bear on Bahrain and what they want to do. And so when that kind of control is there, it makes it very difficult for the United Nations officials to be able to say the things that really should be said. It's quite clear what has gone on. It is unacceptable. It is clearly problematic and so on. So there are some serious issues in terms of that that need to be addressed. But this is a historical problem. This is something that has been going on in Bahrain for a number of years, where Britain would actually try to be the champion of democracy and lecture people around the world, when in fact it's ex-British police officers and MI6 agents and so on have been involved and managing the torture of people in Bahrain, anyone who rises up or says something against the government. And this is something that goes back decades in terms of how Britain has actually been playing a very dirty role on the ground, and people from official places like the MI6 or like the police and so on, or ex-police officers and so on, are directly involved in managing how this is actually controlled and what actually happens on the ground in terms of the regime and legitimizing the regime and the managing when things of this ilk actually happen. So this is going back in terms of the stuff that happens for quite some time. So it's not surprising in a sense.
Well, Michael, the majority of these prisoners are political prisoners, meaning they're activists, they're former politicians, they're academics, etc. And we don't see or hear a whole lot. I mean, they're being basically incarcerated due to their beliefs. But, I mean, when we look at a situation, for example, we have a situation right now in Russia where an individual, the West is calling him a political prisoner, or it can be other places like Venezuela or Iran, and we see what they do when they talk about political prisoners. But we have these individuals and so many of them that are in Bahraini jails, but nothing is being done. Why?
Well, first off, as you mentioned, the people that are being targeted by the United States and the European Union, such as President Putin of Russia and Maduro in Venezuela and the Castros in Cuba, they want the American government wants these people overthrown. They want the legitimate government of Iran overthrown and replaced by governments friendly to the West, governments that will do the bidding of the apartheid entity that styles itself Israel. But God forbid that anyone should question the so-called allies of the United States, the organizations and countries that facilitate the operation of the American Imperium around the world. Bahrain is one great example of this. Without Manama as the home port of the American Fifth Fleet, the Americans would have a substantial loss of control in the region. So they pick and they choose. They support human rights when they want to overthrow a government or gain political influence. They turn a blind eye to places like Iran and Saudi Arabia and the apartheid entity when they engage in murder, war crimes, and human rights violations because it's in their interest. They have friends. They have people that will give them influence, that will do translations and dirty work and things like this. And therefore, the Americans love that.
Well, Reza, we have witnessed protests on and off now for over a decade in Bahrain. Do you think that there has been any progress regarding human rights in that country, or has the situation deteriorated?
I think over that period of time, it would be fair to say that things have actually deteriorated quite considerably. And I think what is further telling within all of this, that while there was some kind of lip service that was being paid initially to what was going on, being unacceptable, gradually over a period of time, this has actually changed, and there is indifference towards political indifference, no political will, and no kind of desire to hide their indifference. And
why is that? Let me just jump in here, Reza. You said no desire to even hide their indifference. So what does that mean? Does that mean there is absolutely no accountability, not obviously inside the country and not from international entities? Your take.
Yeah, so within the country, it's even things like where you've got medical concerns of individual prisoners, and we've seen that whether it's cancer cases, whether it's the corona or issues to do with that, whether it's looking after people who have got medical conditions, all of that has been used as a weapon. So it's been weaponized to deliberately ignore those symptoms, those problems, and those issues to make sure that those people's conditions actually worsen. So it's a systematic problem. It's a systemic problem. So at any level of in terms of basic humanity and human rights or humanitarian kind of issues that are raised by these things, you would have expected that there would have been an outcry regarding making sure that those people got the treatment, were treated, and had their legitimate medical needs and so on met. But there's been a systemic and systematic abuse of that within, and no kind of calling out of this on the international level by either the British government or the American government. And to not even do that is clearly a signal of what's they don't care, and they're not worried about the fact that they are seen to not care. And I think it's those kind of things that suggest that there is very little accountability by them of the Bahraini regime and what it's doing, and also their minions in terms of British police officers that are on the ground in Bahrain managing some of these things in terms of what's actually going on, managing the publicity around this and so on and so forth. So all of these things are very much intertwined. And I think that lack of accountability on the international level is also a problem and needs to be recognized mm-hmm. and called out for what it is. I mean, they don't care, and they don't care that they are shown to not care either. And I think the solutions need to the problems in Bahrain will need to be coming from elsewhere, because if you're looking for the West to provide those solutions, it's not going to happen. They need to be coming. New thought needs to be given to that.
Okay. Well, Michael, originally protests called for political reforms through peaceful demonstrations, but the regime could not even tolerate that. So what do you make of this? And so what are the options? I mean, Reza just said that there has to be some new thought about basically help is not coming from the outside. So what needs to happen in your perspective?
Well, what needs to happen is that the United Nations has got to stop talking and wringing its hands about how things are bad there. The United States State Department's report on human rights on Bahrain for last year goes through a litany of its crimes against the people and its repression to the point where in prison you're not safe because you're beaten, you have poor medical care, and so forth. I think that short of an armed invasion of Bahrain, as the United Nations sanctioned in Korea in the early 1950s, and then in the 90s in Yugoslavia and in Iraq, nothing's going to be done. You've got to point out exactly what's happening. You've got to get the international news media to break their ties with government and point out exactly what is being done to the people of Bahrain by the American-supported government, by the British-supported government. And we've got to really point the finger and publicize this. Certainly publicizing what went on in South Africa brought an end to apartheid. And if you could get the news media to do the same thing in Israel or the same thing with Bahrain, it might be another story, but that's a big task, and it's, you've got to persuade these corporate giants that it's in their interest to report the news factually and carefully and accurately.
Reza, Sheikh Isa Qasim, the main religious leader, of course, Bahrain, says a new constitution is the only way to end the repression in that country. Your take on that, and what would it take for that to happen?
I think in terms of the new constitution and so on, I can't see the Bahraini authorities agreeing to that, because that would mean limiting the powers that the king would have, the limiting the powers that would be had in order to continue the oppression that they are doing in terms of meeting the needs and the aspirations of the Bahraini people. So while this is a legitimate demand, and I think it's appropriate that something like this is instigated and done and provides an alternative about what the way forward could be, and it says very clearly to people looking into Bahrain internationally that, look, there are solutions on the ground that are legitimate, that are valid, and all of those things are there, I think it's very appropriate that something like that is happening. But at the same time, don't hold your breath that this is going to be something that's going to be, they're going to roll over and allow that to be done and the new constitution to be brought in, because it will be, to, you know, which oppressor would like their powers to be limited in any way? Which person, megalomaniac, is going to want to have their powers limited? And that's simply not going to happen. And
so you said that another thought process, sorry to interrupt you, I'm just so limited in time, but you said another thought process, Reza, has to be taken into consideration, because as I said earlier, repeating what you said, that the help is not going to come from those Western powers or the so-called international agency that's supposed to be dealing with human rights. So what's the answer in your perspective? What has to be done?
So I think it's a multitude of things that need to happen. I mean, if there are people sitting outside, I mean, it's looking at grassroots, it's looking at institutional links with Bahrain. So whether it's academic, whether it's on the sporting field, whether it's any of those kind of things that can, so whether it's Formula One that goes there, targeting those people and those kind of things to actually say, you need to rein back, you need to pull out, because this, you, what you're doing is supporting a regime which is oppressive and so on and so forth. So I think at one level, it's got to be that. At the grassroots level within Bahrain, we need to think about, you know, it's like any oppressive system or any oppressive government. Are they going to roll over? They're not, unless you give them and make them an offer and provide them the resistance that is required to make them realize that an alternative offer is